Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joshua. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I am. It was bound to happen, right? I just started working at the new clinic with all the children people, and I think I've picked something up from them.
You don't have your child immunity yet.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. I so rarely get sick. I got sick last year, right when I started working at the county clinic, which again, no surprise, they can be a bit petri dish-ish, no matter how hard you try, and haven't had any problems since. And then the first couple of weeks working at the children people clinic and sick. But let's not focus on that. It is St. Patrick's Day, the day when all the white people stop defending and talking about how indigenous they are to instead focus on how Irish they are.
Yes.
That's what it seems to be. That's what I've seen, like 500 posts, like it feels, about people putting, I'm 0.1% Irish. I'm 0.02% Irish. I'm Irish, but mostly Scottish. I'm like, what does that have to do with anything? So it's just, it's that day. And then they all get drunk and then just fight more about how indigenous Irish they are. I don't know. But that's what this holiday means to me. What about you?
Means nothing to me. Because I didn't really know any Irish heritage people growing up.
Yeah. What?
Ireland is a different island on the other side of the world. And yeah, it was just like, and you had to wear green, otherwise you would get pinched. I had to basically conform and adjust my performance of my gender and body so as to not receive abuse and be assaulted.
There we go.
That's and happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. In recent years, the only reason why I enjoy it is because I like corned beef.
Hey, there we go. That's something.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we can enjoy the food of something, that's great. Because I'm not a big fan of beer. I don't drink beer, and I'm certainly not going to have green beer. Yeah, same. There are some really delicious Irish dishes, such as that corned beef that is yummy. A nice little sandwich, maybe.
A lovely Reuben.
Yes. There we go.
I do love watching Gangs of New York.
Ah, there we go.
Marty Scorsese, Gangs of New York.
All right. There we go. There's our salute. Fright School salute, St. Patrick's Day. Watch Leprechaun with a delightfully young Jennifer Aniston, one of her first film roles, if not the first, which gotta love that. I love an A-lister who's life, career, whatever I'm trying to say, began in the horror film. What else has been going on? How have you been doing?
How have I been doing? I've been okay. Work has been all right. It's been a little busy. I've been enjoying. I started a rewatch of Girls 5 Eva.
A rewatch?
Because it was, so Girls 5 Eva was on Netflix, or no, it was on Peacock. Mm-hmm. And now it's on Netflix. Netflix took it over and they just released a new season of it. And I realized that I hadn't finished watching the second season.
Okay.
So I decided to just start from the beginning. And it is, the humor in it is so fun. And it's also like, it's a sitcom that doesn't rely on like situational humor. There are jokes. There are actual jokes in it, which is really, always really great and fun to see.
That's about the girl group who decides to reunite after a long time or something.
Yeah. So they were looking back on it, they are a problematic girl group from the aughts mania of girl groups and boy bands. Mm-hmm. And one of their songs gets sampled by a rapper. And so that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm starting to remember. I did watch the first few episodes of this, I think, when it was new and you were watching it and you were like, oh, mm-hmm. you should check it out. Because Paula Pell is in it, right?
Paula Pell is in it. Yeah. It's just the funniest gag because she plays one of the girls and she's obviously like older. Paula Pell is older than Sarah Bareilles, Busy Phillips, right. Renee Elise Goolsberry, who are in it. But like and it's also like they do a lot of flashbacks to when they were in, like when they were famous in the band. And there's a lot of really like hints that she's a lesbian.
Okay. Yeah.
So she's a lesbian dentist who's, what is her, like, we were the first gay couple to be divorced in the state of New York. Well, so yeah, Paula Pell is really fun and in, so is Busy Phillips.
All right. Again, we're keeping up on current events here on Fright School, yeah. Always.
And speaking of current events, Joshua, I went and saw Love Lies Bleeding on
Friday. Oh, I want to see that. Did you like it?
I did. That would actually be a good movie for you and the Sam Squancher to see on a movie day. It was fun to watch it in the theater because I think that it would be a good at-home watch, but obviously it's so different, the scale and the size of things in a theater. Plus, it was technically its opening weekend, its wide release opening weekend. So the theater that we went to was smaller but pretty packed, and there are jump scares in it that happen that are really fun. And
yeah. So it is a horror film because at first I wasn't sure. It seemed like it was like a lesba drama, maybe, kind of movie. That's what it was giving me in some of the initial images of it, but it also looked creepy. There was something else happening.
There isn't, it's definitely, I don't know, because I want to say it's horror, but like in the way that, like,
oh, it's listed as a thriller romance. Okay.
Joyride. What's the one that we did with Paul Walker and Steve Zahn? Joyride, right?
Yeah, Joyride.
So similar to like Joyride, but there isn't anything chasing them. Mm. Like it's menacing. It's definitely on the thriller side of horror, I would say.
Okay.
Directed by Rose Glass, who also did Saint Maud.
Okay.
Which explains a lot of it. And the last 10 minutes of the film are wild, like, doesn't make sense, but also really does make sense. Like, it's really fun.
Okay. Looks good. Kristen Stewart, Jenna Malone, Dave Franco. Okay. Anna Baryshnikov.
Jenna Malone plays like a character that I've never seen her play. Mm-hmm. She's always the kind of like the girl who is the femme fatale in the film. And she is not that character in this movie, which is really fun to see her range.
I definitely want to see it. It looked, from the images that I did see of it, looked really good. And I know she's been on the cover of everything lately talking about it. Kristen Stewart. So yeah, I definitely want to see that. Cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Josie, it was really good.
It was really fun. What fun things have you been up to?
Nothing.
Yeah, I doubt that.
I don't know. Well, I mean, a lot of schoolwork interrupted by, concerts. But yeah, I'm so buried in classwork. I need to dig out of this hole. But despite that, we did, of course, we went to see Madonna in Palm Springs this past week, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. Great, great show. Great seats. If you follow me on the Instagram, I posted some photos from the show, that was like my view. We were so close to the stage.
Amazing. Those
were from my perspective. It wasn't me zooming in. She was just in front of us. So that was cool. Closest we've ever been, I think, for one of her shows. So right against the Because the two people who bought the seats next to us, because we actually were in the middle, never showed up. So I was like, I'm just going to scoot down and be closer to the, yeah, I'm not sure what happened. So I just scooted down and we were just there. And
they must have died.
I don't know what happened, but the, yeah, who knows? But the way the stage is set up on this tour, it's massive. First of all, it's a really big stage with lots of, I guess if you put them all together, maybe they wouldn't be so big, but it's all these different sections that kind of represent New York City. So there's an uptown, a downtown, east, west, all these different spaces.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. And, but it happened to be where we were positioned was in between the three, midtown, downtown, and east, I think. And a huge section of the show is done because she did a pretty good job of breaking it up so that there's four or five songs performed on this stage, four or five on that stage, four or five on that stage, for keeping it fairly balanced so that no matter where you were in the arena or in the concert venue, you would at least see, you know, some of the show right in front of you. But even that, like even how big it was and depending on where she was, it didn't really take away if she wasn't near you. It was all right. But because of where we were placed, we were like in front of a lot of the show. So that was really fun. And then sometimes she was behind us, but it was fun just to turn around and like watch everybody from the back. But yeah, it was super fun. Great show. Overall, I think the audience was pretty well behaved. The people around us were nice.
Behaved is good.
Hot, very hot because she doesn't use AC. So it was burning up in the
You're burning up for her show is happening there. Were there any songs that, you? I know that you're a huge Madonna fan, so is the Sam Squatcher. Were there any songs that you were surprised that she did on this tour? Like, I heard it's everything in the kitchen sink.
No, I mean, I'm more surprised by stuff that feels like it was left out, like Lucky Star or Material Girl, some of like her bigger hits. But she has done those a lot on previous tours. And this was just so much to try to pack into 40 years. I was a little disappointed. So she started doing Take a Bow to close out the main show a few weeks ago or a month or two ago or whatever. And I was disappointed in that because she had been doing Rain from Erotica up until that point. And so I was bummed about that change because I've never seen Rain perform live. I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs of hers. Twist My Arm. I have a lot of Madonna songs I like, but I would have liked to have heard that live that I'd never seen that before. So that was a bit, I was bummed by that, but I was glad that she did Take a Bow. It was a huge hit. And I remember it everywhere when I was a kid. It's like you couldn't turn on the radio without hearing that song. And she had never given it love at all, like never played it on any of the tours. So it was a little, I know people were really excited. There was a lot of that thing where other people were like really wanted to hear that song and I was talking about it. I'm like, I don't, I'm here or there on it. But yeah, I don't think there was really anything surprising. One, I already knew the set list. And even when I saw it originally laid out, I was like, yeah, that tracks. That's probably a good, it's a good set list. I wouldn't even say, let me just look it up and see if there was anything. Should have pulled it up before. Opening the show with Nothing Really Matters was a choice. That's a really good song off of Ray of Light. It's not as, it made sense. Like this show is very cerebral. So it's like she's telling this story about her life in a way. It's like a memoir. So I got why she started with that and the messaging of the song. Love being all we need, this sort of thing.
Sure. Really but otherwise, but love.
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Exactly. So yeah, other than that, it was pretty much right through. I wasn't too, yeah, it's so hard to even like excuse me I told you got the sneeze. It made sense. And just going with the flow of it and just being in awe of all of it, especially because of like where our seats were, I was just like, oh my god, this is so cool. It was really neat. I will say, and I don't know, I almost want to see the show again. But Jeff and I were talking about this because we both turned to each other at the same time and we're like, as we do nowadays, having the same thought at the same time. We were like, I think she's got like a filter or something on like the video screens. I don't know how that works live, but when you're that close to the stage, we're like looking at her and then you're like, look up at the film. And I know some of it's like makeup and lighting effects, right? Very things that we know from like drag queens, right? It's you want to have the bright lights on you and because you're doing the makeup to that.
Yeah.
To interact that way. So I don't know.
She would know something about drag too.
Exactly. So maybe it's just that the lighting and all of that is so good. But there were definitely some times where I'm like, man, it really looks like there's some kind of live filter. And somebody, I like, there are some Madonna fans who are a bit like any extreme fans of any pop person, very delusional, and will act, no, the stuff she puts on Instagram, these things are her real face. It's no, she's using a lot, she's using filters. And they're like, I don't think that they were fighting, as I looked it up afterwards, because I was like, I wonder if anybody else has noticed that it looks like there is like a live beauty filter of some sort. Is that possible? Which I would imagine, because on Zoom, like, we could put on like a beauty filter, right? Isn't there something that kind of corrects your...
Yeah. So it's not all AI, like,
yeah,
you know,
so it's not out of the realm of possibility to use something like that.
But to have it be baked, or have the technology be in live cameras, right? But, film quality cameras.
Yeah. It was just interesting. Again, I'm not for sure, but it's just because we were so close, there were times where I look at her and then look up at the screen. I'm like, this looks like there's something filtered on. But again, it really could also just be really good makeup and lighting that, of course, you know, is designed to, you know, look better on camera. But there were, and sure, again, that's not to say anything, you know, I think the conversation about how good or bad Madonna looks is boring. But
it's boring.
Yeah. But I will say, for a 65-year-old woman up there, you know, doing this, like, I don't think she needed any filters or anything like that. I think that if she, you know, stopped doing that, would be far more groundbreaking, just because she's really looks, you know,
yeah,
she's a beautiful 60-something-year-old woman, regardless, like, of aging. So I think it was more of seeing her up close and being like, gosh, yeah, you don't give yourself maybe enough credit. Maybe she's just not comfortable enough with the way she looks, or something, to give herself a little credit. So yeah, but that was just an odd thing that we both noticed. The screens are, they seem to be doing some magic, but again, could just be lighting. I don't fucking know anything about how those kinds of big shows are done.
Yeah.
But the show was great, super fun. She seemed to be in a great mood. A little derisive of Palm Springs sometimes. Bob, the drag queen, was in the whole show. Bob is like this narrator, plays these different roles throughout the show, and came in and was like, oh, we are in the land of the daddies. All the daddies here in Palm Springs, and talking about daddy issues and stuff. And Madonna came out and was like, I have daddy issues, but I don't think I'm going to get any daddies here. You know? And she kept comparing it to like Little Rock. I don't know. She just kept trying to make these like jokes about Palm Springs being like a tiny town or something. I don't know. It was weird. It was like, I'm not sure where you're going with this. Like, Palm Springs is some like podunk town that she's deigned to visit.
Which is wild, because I would imagine that her demographic is squarely in the middle, is squarely Palm
Springs. The place was sold out. Like, we looked before and there was only a handful of tickets available. So yeah, I mean, if you're going to pack us, there's plenty of places she can pack an arena, but like, Palm Springs is a great place to go because people from LA came, people from San Diego came. And then of course you have all these, yeah, the aging retired gay daddies who have loved her for 40 years. That's where they live.
Yeah.
So be careful, girl. Don't offend them. Don't brush them off so easily.
Yeah.
And they were there in full force. Oh my gosh. It was pretty entertaining, just people watching. That's why I was like, we have to get there early, because I want to like people watch. Just see everybody like dressed up in their best like Madonna looks or 80s looks or whatever. Lots of leather. She has so many different eras that people are able to.
Yeah.
There's a lot there to mine. So overall, it was a really fun time. Nightmare getting out of the place. I don't think they built this arena. It's new, the Acrisure. I don't know how long it's been around, but it's relatively new. And I don't know if they've even had somebody as big as Madonna play there. So I think it's going to be very good for them, because maybe they'll be able to get more big name acts to come and play these places. But the parking was a nightmare. I think it took us an hour to get out of the place.
Oh, wow. Because
it was just like badly designed exit strategy. Yeah, not great. Which sucks, because we parked even near an exit and it's still, there was like no direction. So it was like cars from like 20 lanes all trying to converge into one thing. So you'd have, by the time we got up to the front, it was like, here's our car. There's a car here, a car coming this way, all trying to like go. And so it was just... Yeah, I can't recommend the Acrisure Palm Springs for parking. I don't know. Maybe park somewhere else. get an Uber in. That's the other problem, though. There's not really anywhere to walk there.
I mean, no, and
it's they're still building that area up.
We had similar problems, but we had similar problems in getting out of Beyonce last year. But because we did rideshare there and we wanted to rideshare back, it took us an hour to find it. And for me, it was like you could tell it was well organized for the people to, for the folks to get in and out with their car, like with parking, like that looked pretty well organized. But what was
where was this at? Was it
this was at SoFi in LA.
Okay.
But it's so wild because you would think that now in 2024 or in 2023 at the time with like Uber and all of that, that they would just create an area where like all rideshare goes here.
Yeah.
And SoFi is like literally across the street, catty corner from the Forum where Madonna was in LA for all those nights. So they could have just turned the Forum parking lot into, hey, this is all a rideshare area. Uber's over here, Lyft over here, and then just make it like there has to be better way infrastructure wise. And so it really sucks when you don't have, when people like don't think those things all the way through. But that could also just be me being my project management brain going through.
Yeah, getting in and getting parked was really easy, but getting out was a disaster. And again, they didn't have a lot of really good people like, it just, there wasn't like infrastructure to get out. It was like, they were like, all right, we all parked here, so figure it out. There was like one guy waving an orange light, but we were just like, okay, you're not, this is not working. Whatever you're trying to attempt to do, this isn't the way. Yeah. But overall, that didn't spoil the night. It was really great. And I keep saying, it's like, people, she almost died, literally. And she's been talking about it. Like, she couldn't walk. She couldn't do anything. And it literally, whatever was going on with her, this infection, whatever, almost killed her. And wow. So it was just awesome to be there and to get to see her again, whether it's the last time or we're going to still see her 10 more times or whatever, who knows? She's definitely going to be one of these people that she was almost close to death 3 or 4 months ago. And now she, or whatever, 3 or 4 months before she started the tour, and here she is doing all this stuff. So she's going to be one of those people who's just going to drop dead on stage. So I'll keep going until that happens.
Yeah, and you will be there to see it, is what you're saying.
I will be there to watch.
Joshua, remember when we used to be young and talk about other things, except like how bad it was to get parking in and out of the show?
Right.
We used to be young. Miley Cyrus, that song.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of things that have died and been brought back to life, like our goddess and savior Madonna, we'll be right back to chat about Lisa. Is it Frankenstein? Lisa Frankenstein.
I've been saying Frankenstein.
Hey, everybody. I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer slash the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome back. So today we are wrapping up our little March dedication to Frankenstein and films related by discussing this year, 2024, just came out back in February 9th, just in time for Valentine's Day. Lisa Frankenstein, written by Diablo Cody, one of our faves here on the show. I almost said channel. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about.
Subscribe to our channel.
She wrote Jennifer's Body, so we love her for that. And directed by Zelda Williams, we got Catherine Newton, who we loved in Freaky, Cole Sprouse, who I know I recognize, I think, from various Disney things, possibly. I can't say I've actually seen him in anything except for this, but I know his face.
Riverdale.
And he has a twin, right? I didn't watch Riverdale.
Oh, okay. Riverdale is probably the closer thing to this film, because there's a darkness about that Archie adaptation.
I see. We also got Carla, is it Gugino?
I've been saying Gugino, or I think it's Gugino if it's the Italian.
Anyways, we love her. We most recently saw her in the Fall of the House of Usher series on Netflix, which was great. So love her in this, playing this like evil stepmother. So super delightful.
Yes.
And oh, the father, what I recognized him too. Joe, another Crest, C-H-R-E-S-T. I don't think it's probably Trest. It's probably Crest, right?
Yes.
Who I know I've seen in other things.
He's played a dad in other things. He's Nancy's dad in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Nancy and Mike's dad.
That's right. But he's another one who I've seen pop up in various sundry films. So, yeah, the movie is about Lisa Swallows, which is hysterical. But that's her name.
Yeah.
This teenage girl who is, she's a spooky kook. I love her already. And she's lonely. Her mother was murdered very slasherly. This movie has a lot of 80s going on all over the place, sometimes to the destruction of an actual plot, but we'll talk about that.
It's a whole lot of 80s going on there.
Yeah. So her mother was murdered by slasher villain. A whole other movie could have been made on that.
Yes.
And now she's living with her dad and his new wife. And of course, her stepsister, who is the cheerleader, right out of cookie cutter, at least at first. I do think she, if any of the characters, has a bit more complexity to her than at first glance. But
the sister?
Yeah, the stepsister.
Taff.
Taffy. And yeah, so Lisa's really lonely, but she's in love with a gravestone. She goes and hangs out in the bachelor's cemetery, and lightning strikes, and guess what? That guy comes back to life, and then teenage romance ensues.
Teenage on her part, and he's centuries old.
Yeah. It's like the Twilight thing, right? It's I'm 16 or 17 and you're 117.
Yes. So
not sure about this. But anyways, Joe, what did you think of old Lisa Frankenstein?
It was fun. It was irreverent. It was like a cross between Edward Scissorhands and Napoleon Dynamite, right? Ooh. Like the aesthetic of Edward Scissorhands, the kind of indie tweeness of Napoleon Dynamite, and then a little bit of like super bad Santa Clarita Diet gore mixed in there.
Okay.
There was a lot that I was like, I don't know how to describe it other than it was fun. I liked it. I don't think I'd watch it again, but it was a fun watch.
I definitely think I'd watch it again. If I was a kid now, I'd probably be really into it. This is one of those movies, you know, I use Goonies as an example a lot because I never saw Goonies as a kid. Okay.
Sure.
So it wasn't something that was part of like my cultural identity coming up. I'd watch Beetlejuice. I love that and those kinds of movies, but I hadn't seen The Goonies. So when I tried to watch The Goonies as an adult, I was like, that was cute, but it lost on me. And I wonder if I'd never seen Beetlejuice and I watched it as an adult, although I don't know. I feel like Beetlejuice has maybe more on The Goonies, but there are things in it that you're just like, that doesn't make any sense. Or again, I have criticized Lydia in the end, kind of becoming this squeaky clean teen kind of vibe. That undermines the story in a way, but maybe that's not a good example. But regardless, I think that if I was like a teenager now and was the same person as I am and was then, I'd probably love this movie and I would probably watch it a whole bunch just because aesthetically I love it. That was something in the critical responses of it, which were not overwhelmingly positive, saying that it's brief, pleasant, fun to look at. So there you go, fun. And the movie is not interested in anything more than love and being understood. And in that way, it's a great callback to teen romances from an earlier era. And then that was from the New York Times. And then Megan Navarro, like Bloody Disgusting, called it cute, quirky, disjointed, and harmless dark comedy that's less interested in fluid storytelling than it is championing teen weirdos and outcasts through an 80s vibe, which I would totally agree with. I think that's the thing. This for me, did you ever see Welcome to the Dollhouse with Heather Matarazzo?
No.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. I'll have to show you that movie sometime. It's such a bizarre little film. But it reminds me of that Beetlejuice kind of thing. What else? Like stuff that's like that. You picked out some good stuff too. Edward Scissorhands, certainly. There's that kind of vibe in there.
Heathers. It's also got Heathers, a Heathers vibe.
Totally Heathers, yes. But yeah, we shouldn't forget about that. Yeah, very Heathers. Again, it in the title, right? Lisa Frank. Like, it's that mm-hmm. sort of iridescent neon kind of vibe. And yeah. But also reminds me a lot of who's really going to love this movie, I would think, are the kids, young women, boys, young girls, boys, whoever, who are really into Monster High, the Monster High dolls. Do you ever see those? I have a couple of them because they're I have the ones that are like the Beetlejuice dolls. That's from that group. Elvira, the Elvira doll I have is from the Monster High kind of thing. But they have all these like monsters that are like cutesy Barbie doll vibes, right? This is totally for that group, I think, would really like this. So I think this is going to be one of those movies that in 10, 20 years, people will be talking about, sure, it was dumb, but it's like the aesthetics of it. And I think it'll mean a lot to future spooky children. Future legendary spooky children.
Yes, the future legendary spooky children.
But yeah, the film itself, we were just watching it. We went to see it, I think, on Valentine's Day, actually, because it was a Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was out of school and I am not at the clinic. So we went to the movie theater to see it because I was like, I really want to see it. It looks cute. And it just something visually fun to look at. Right.
Yeah.
Man, I wish I still smoked because this would be a great movie to get stoned to. Maybe it might make more sense. I don't know. Maybe a pot-addled brain could connect some of the dots. It's not that it doesn't totally make any sense. It's just right.
Yeah.
It's just so ridiculous, but maybe that's the point. But anyway, so we went on Valentine's Day, and then right after we got Korean barbecue. So, hey.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
A little, yeah. So, I got to say that I did feel that Diablo Cody was also being self-referential. Ooh. The scenes at the party where someone spikes Lisa's drink, or she drinks from a spiked drink without knowing it, and then is nearly assaulted by her lab partner.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is giving a little Jennifer's Body, right? A little the beginning of Jennifer's Body, but also taps into the revenge aspect of it too, which I also appreciate that they didn't have to go there all the way, right? Jennifer's Body went there. Never showed it to you, but like the implication is that like they went all the way to the end. And with this, they did not, which I was like, oh, this is perfect. I liked how they managed that, but I thought it was just interesting to be like, oh, you're like referencing yourself now, or you understand that you are a part of a canon that you could reference yourself and not have it be strange or weird. I thought it fit perfectly, and it just made sense with all the other references that were hidden throughout the film. But it was just, I had to remind myself that it was written by Diablo Cody.
Yeah, I think she made a statement somewhere that it belonged in the same universe as Jennifer's Body, which I thought, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, I like that a lot, like, actually.
The heightened reality of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree, because I was just like, when they were getting to that scene at the beginning, I'm like, oh, man, we're like going to have to, like, this is going to be awful to sit through. But then it was like pushing it, and then just enough to show, I again, because later, right, so once the creature's resurrected, he's like missing parts, some very important parts, as we find out as the film goes on. But he's missing a hand to begin with, and a tongue, so we got to get him a hand. And so I think that scene really sets up, like, we're just like, oh, her lab partner's garbage. We want to see something bad happen to him because I'm being a bit tangential, because the Frankenstein thing is a bit of a misnomer. Cause I'm thinking like, this is going to be maybe like American Horror Story Coven, like where we're going to build a body from boy parts. Oh, of course she's going to kill this guy and use him. And that's what the story will be, is her kind of using these different bullies to make I didn't know that it was going to be like, you know, resurrected zombie thing. You know, that she's just helping find parts to replace for him. So that's what that sets up. you know, that obviously, yeah, this guy sucks. Let's chop his hand off and give it to our friend, the creature. But again, he's more of a zombie thing.
Like he's not like from scratch, right? He's par baked.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I do love the her skill, right? Because Frankenstein as a concept is supposed to be this virtuosic doctor, physician. And so her skill is not that, but it's sewing, which is a very traditionally woman pursuit, right?
Right.
And so she's using her skill with the sewing needle and apparently a faulty tanning bed, which was, yeah. I love that so much.
Yeah.
To do this. And it's just, it makes zero sense, but I also love the twist on it, right?
Yeah, yeah. The tanning bed is, which her sister had won from
Hawaiian Tropic or something like that.
Something. Yeah. 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 That was delightful. I was trying to find, I had read an interesting conversation about talking about like Frankenstein and how there's part of Frankenstein that can be seen as kind of about the horrors of like growing up and being in an adult, and especially through the creature's eyes when it's brought into this world and then abandoned by its father. And there's all of this, the horror of the existential horror of it all, of living, that maybe this film is touching into. Cause it's really, other than the name, there isn't a lot of, I think, direct, obvious connection to Frankenstein, other than obviously we're doing about it. It's not really like a retelling of it. She's not like some mad scientist, spooky girl kind of thing that we saw in The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, for instance.
Yeah, just you know, more direct adaptation.
Yeah, very that, much more direct. So this is just, again, it's, I think because Diablo Cody, I don't know how old she is. I imagine she's got to be near my age, or maybe she's 45. So she's, what is that? 5 years older than I am, 6 years older than I am. So she would have been like prime time for Lisa Frank shit as like a teenager, mm-hmm. I think. Because yeah, then that sort of emerged coming out of like
the 80s into the 90s.
Yeah, because I remember going to school in like first, second, third grade and girls having those stickers and the folders. It's Trapper Keepers. Oh, the Lisa Frank Trapper Keepers.
Yeah. Weird zebras and tigers.
And I remember my mom buying like the coloring books for my sister. And my mom was really good at coloring. So it was fun to watch her color those books. But other than a great name, because that's like the name of it, Lisa Frankenstein is delightful to me. I'm like, oh, there's so much possibility with that, that I don't think the film exactly lives up to, other than the aesthetics of it. Which again, is what I was saying earlier, because her room, it's like pink, but goth pink, which is really delightful, you know? But yeah, other than that, there, I don't see too many real connections with Frankenstein. All right. What else was I going to say about this movie? I did really like your point about how it connects. It's a bit self-referential to Diablo Cody's own. Yeah. Because I hadn't written anything about that, but now I'm going to have to, I do want to watch it again. So maybe I'll be reminded a little bit more
of things
from within Diablo Cody's world. Let's see. Yeah, it's not exactly, it's a comedy horror film, right? Which can be difficult to walk, right? Because there's not really much to be afraid of here, other than, again, Carla's Janet. She's terrifying, the stepmom.
Yeah.
her whole sequence is awful. I'm like, I wouldn't want to be connected to this woman either. Yeah, I don't know.
It's also funny because Taffy so desperately wants a dad. They don't. It's so funny because Taffy and the dad are actually the best part of the whole movie, because they get exactly what it is they want at the end. Right.
Yeah, like,
Taffy
that's a good
gets
point.
A loving parent.
Yeah.
And then the dad, Mr. Swallows, gets a daughter who's not strange or weird or reminds him of his murdered wife.
That's true. Although, I mean, that's years of family therapy right there.
I'm going to say, I was like, not to pathologize them, but they probably should work through some of that.
I will say I just read that Diablo Cody said that the play on words was unintentional because she was paying homage to weird science.
Oh,
which that's also a good, yeah, I guess I could definitely see how this is paying homage to weird science and both have characters who are bringing these fantasy love interests to life. I wanted to see, Kelly LeBrock as Lisa.
Yeah. Now I need to look up the weird science poster because I think it's this a similar type of poster. Yeah, it's not exactly, but like the split of the two guys in the poster with Kelly LeBrock in the center is a little bit with the Lisa Frankenstein of it all.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
That is so interesting. Okay, again, it was one of those things where it's just shoehorned into a fun wordplay, but is actually not really like anywhere resembling a faithful adaptation.
Yeah, because it's not like even... There's stuff we could talk about, like body horror, obviously, with his literally his body parts are needing to be replaced and falling apart. And there's something to be said about becoming an adult, becoming a man for him in there or for her coming into herself as well, which I really like. At the beginning of the film, she's all spooky and got her own thing going on. Definitely an ancestor of Lydia Dietz and Beetlejuice and those kind of vibes. But really the second half of the movie when she's like doing her makeup with the cat eyes, she gets very Madonna actually.
Yes.
Back to our earlier conversation, very Madonna, Cyndi Lauper, goth. I don't know who that might be, where we might land with that. Even a bit Susie Sue to some degree. Yeah. Sorry. I'm like trying to think like what else. Sure. It's such a, yeah, this is one of those movies that it's like, I thought it'd be fun to wrap up with because it had just come out. Yeah, it's not really too tied into Frankenstein mythology other than, like I said, the very superficial kind of ways that we've talked about it. I just thought it was really fun. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. It was candy, right? It's something sweet.
Sweet for Valentine's Day, for sure.
Yeah. And actually, I really like the idea of pairing it with like Weird Science. I think that could be fun to watch this and Weird Science as like a movie night. That would be fun.
Yeah.
What would you pair it with?
Oh, I feel like this would, honestly, I would probably pair it with either Edward Scissorhands or Napoleon Dynamite.
Okay, so.
It reminded me of, you can tell the town is artificial, right? There are some scenes where you can tell that when she's in front of the house and the neighbors are sitting outside in the middle of the night commenting about the strange girl across the street. Those are the things that just feel really offbeat. So I probably would do Napoleon Dynamite because the tone is similar. I really loved one thing I really loved is from the beginning, you get the guy's backstory in the opening credits.
I like that too. Shadow puppet kind of thing.
Shadow puppet reminded me of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. They tell tale of the Deathly Hallows. It reminded me of that. It reminded me of a little bit of Krampus. So I love the storytelling, and I like it when this is like I've started to realize that like I love when you can tell the opening credits are part of the storytelling.
Because
they also do that in Cooties, too, where they're showing you how the infected chicken nuggets get into the school.
Yeah, I enjoyed the credits. I remember when they started, I was like, oh, this seems really promising. And I like leaned over and said, I was like, this might be good. Which, I mean, again, it's not that it wasn't good. It's just I think it definitely could have been better. I think. That's most let down of it is that I think it could have been a lot better, but I think it's something again from Halloween party, put this on TV with like music going, that'd be perfect.
I could see it like a Halloween party that has like a theme around it, around like an 80s theme, but it's not necessarily like 80s movies, but just like the theme is the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It added like good ambiance to something, to a party. Or again, as something to watch with other, you know, I could see this as being like a really future, fun, good, bad movie. That's how I'm thinking of it. There are movies that we like to watch that we know are like stupid, but they're fun. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is like one of those, at least currently. Again, I only saw it the one time a month and a half ago. I haven't given it a ton of thought to. But again, not everything needs to be like so much cinema and stuff, right? Is super complex or super deep and has to, everything has to be this major existential navel gazing in horror. Yeah. So, and everything. So having a really fun movie come out for Valentine's Day for spooky folks like us, I thought it did the job. And again, like I said, I would definitely watch it again. I enjoyed it overall. And we left it because I know Jeffrey was a little bit more, I don't know. but I was like, gosh, the more I think about it, the more I like it, the more I just like the vibe of it. And that's where I landed.
Yeah.
It's a good evening movie. Let's put on that, something nice to watch, turn my brain off before I go to bed.
Yeah, I agree with you there as far as like, it is a turn your brain off movie.
Yeah, definitely. All righty. Well, fun. What I love is that, again, we spent the last couple of episodes talking about a well over 100-year-old story, 200-year-old story that was written by a teenage woman that remains indelibly important to this genre and many others. So it's cool that there are still things being inspired by Frankenstein, and I look forward to whatever comes next. And we haven't even hit anywhere near all the things that we could talk about with Frankenstein, so I'm sure that we will revisit this again in the future. Yay. All right. For now, that is going to wrap us up, and we will be off for a few weeks. We're going on spring break.
Spring vacation.
Yes, and then we will be back. I don't know. Are we coming back with another Joe Takes Over?
I don't know. We'll see.
All right, we'll see. It might be that, or it might be
something
else.
I need to consult my advisor, and because I want to change my thesis again, and I'm afraid that he's going to have things to say about it.
Hey, it's always fun to hear what you're cooking up. But yeah, we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Find us on all the things at Fright School. And as always, thank you for listening and good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.